Hello and welcome to this edition of the Running with the Herd podcast, powered up by Herd Nation, a part of the Rivals Network. We have a couple of special guests here with us. As always, we have my co-host, Josh Stowers. Josh, welcome.
Thank you, sir.
And we have Fisher Cross here joining us, former staffer on the men's basketball program.
Welcome. How y'all doing? Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. And we are live streaming both on Facebook as well as X, formerly known as Twitter. If you have a question for either Fisher, Josh, or myself, you can chime in on the live stream. We will read your comments, some of them, live on the air. And this will also be simulcast to not only both Twitter and X, but it'll be archived in YouTube as well. It will also be on both the Herd Nation pages, both Old Fairfield as well as Herd Nation. So you'll get a chance to join the conversation with us there. But guys, let's start out with it. We're going to get into quite a few topics, but we're going to start out with the regular season Sun Belt champions in women's basketball, the Thundering Herd of Marshall, coached by Kim Caldwell. And in year one, guys, she's done a phenomenal job with the program. We talked about it a little bit off air. Josh Fisher, I mean, obviously, you know, you start 300 and some odd days ago. You come in with a vision. You come in with a blueprint. And the fruits of that labor have now come, and they've won a conference championship in women's basketball. Probably, I'm almost 40 years old. Josh, you're 43. Fisher, I'm not sure how old you are, but I know that it hasn't been done. We'll start off with you, Josh. Just talk a little bit about the job that Kim's done with these young ladies and just the kind of product that they put out on the floor.
Well, first and foremost, obviously, congratulations to those guys. It's been an incredible season for them. You know, admittedly, I am not a women's basketball fan per se. But I will admit that in the last couple of weeks, I have found myself creeping into the box score on the women's team and checking it out. It's, you know, for Coach Caldwell, I mean, an incredible job, not just by her, but her staff. You know, the girls obviously buying in is a huge part of that. I mean, because her system is far and away different than the previous system. You know, they're like fifth in the country in scoring. So, I mean, they play at an incredible pace. You know, they kind of have a floor leader with Abby Beeman. And what she's doing is you know, off the charts in itself. I mean, you know, if you look at her numbers, I mean, I think she's averaging like 17, 6, and 6. I mean, I don't, you know, obviously, like I said, I don't follow women's basketball all that much. But, I mean, like, those are incredible numbers for men's or women's, either one. I mean, those are star-studded numbers. So, you know, great season from her, but you know, not just her. It's been top to bottom. I mean, there's a lot of girls play. I mean, she plays a lot of you know, depth, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at, has been really good for them, especially after they lost the one girl to the transfer earlier in the year. I mean, I think that just shows, like, you know, the depth that she was able to build and, you know, just the system that she has, and it's been exciting. I mean, like I said, I mean, like, I don't watch women's basketball, but I have been excited for the program. It's exciting for Marshall. You know, like, they close out tomorrow, I think, against Georgia Southern, maybe.
Yep.
At home. So, you know, hopefully the fans will get out. It's senior night for them. So get out and support that. And then obviously going in the next week for the Sun Belt tournament, I mean, yeah, they'll be the number one seed. So it's exciting. I mean, like I said, it'll be fun to watch and see how far they can take that thing.
Yeah, Fisher. I mean, from an outsider's perspective, I mean, obviously, you know, it's been great to see what the women's program has done. Just what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, I've got a lot of experience with building teams and building rosters and being a part of the makeup of what it takes to build a winner. And it's really difficult, you know, especially to do that in, you know, one season. I think it speaks to the ability to do so from where the landscape is in college basketball and really college athletics as a whole right now. You can really flip a roster from one year to the next. Obviously she came in with a vision and a plan. That was funny that, you brought those up in your intro there. Cause that was two things that, as I was kind of prepping and thinking about this, this podcast this evening, of two things that I really wanted to highlight about how she's had to have done an incredible job of building and laying those out. And then, you know, it's not only building those out and laying those out in your mind, it's getting your players and your coaches and your staff to buy into what you're doing, the program you're trying to build, and who you're trying to become. Most of the time, it's not an overnight thing. And it definitely wasn't an overnight thing for them. It seems, you know, 1 year seems like a long time or a short time, right? But it's waking up every day, going to work, getting after it, and continuing day by day to build those bricks and build that foundation of what your program is going to become for years and years and years. And so congrats to them. You know, obviously a conference championship is extremely difficult to, especially a regular season title. That means you've really got to bring it from, you know, January 1st all the way through the end of the regular season to be able to climb that mountaintop. But they didn't start there. I mean, they had, Florida beat Florida at home early in the season and have racked up some great wins and great performances. And Abby Beeman has been really fun to watch. They play an exciting and fun style of basketball. And so major credit to Coach Caldwell, all the girls on that team and that whole staff. Really excited. I worked with Cam Molina with the men's basketball program. He was one of our managers for a couple of years while I was there. And a great kid. He's a GA on the staff for them now. And so really happy for Cam, really happy for that whole program. And obviously Coach Caldwell has done a tremendous job of building that roster, building that team, and establishing her culture in such a quick and efficient manner in year one.
Yeah, she certainly has. And coming from Division II Glenville State, I mean, obviously it was a major leap, not only as far as, you know, competition and everything, but also, like you both alluded to, getting not only the coaching staff and the players to buy in. And obviously they have one more regular season game left before the tournament, and anything can happen in the tournament. And when you have a floor general like Abby Beeman out there distributing the basketball, getting her teammates involved, stuff like that, it's definitely something that, you know, you want to see as a basketball fan and that kind of thing. But we alluded to it a little bit off the air. We'll kind of get into it a little bit. With success breeds eyes, and with eyes means money, more opportunities to do your thing at an even higher level, whether it's at Marshall, whether it's someplace else. And obviously, you know, Coach Caldwell is a West Virginia girl. She's, you know, from this Mountain State. She spent a lot of time there. She coached at Glenville State. She's obviously coaching at Marshall now. It doesn't seem like right now that she has any desire or plans to leave. But like I said, if you have success, that's going to generate a lot of attention. Guys, we'll start out with you, Fisher. I mean, when you think about the kind of success that Coach Caldwell has had, what do you do if you're athletic director Christian Spears, if you're president Brad Smith? I mean, do you open up the checkbook and kind of restructure that deal a little bit?
You know, without knowing the exact specifics of the ins and outs of that deal, it's kind of hard to speak on that. You know, I think they gave her a pretty good contract, and I think it was a 7-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously they showed the investment, and it was something that they, you know, from my understanding, they went out and attacked trying to get her as the next head coach of the program. And so, you know, I don't know what more or, you know, what more they need to do or can do or should do. That's for Christian and, you know, the rest of the athletic department to make that decision and come to. But, you know, obviously, if you look at, you know, if nothing else, obviously you look at the wins and losses, right? But something that's been exciting for me to see is, you know, the fan base has really come alive and supported that program, and that hasn't been the case in years past. And so with winning, you know, obviously, like you said, comes eyes, comes support, it comes fans. And so she's done a tremendous job of building that program into something that, you know, I mean, who knows? I certainly didn't know that it would become that in one season. I didn't know that she would have a pretty packed house to be watching, you know, a weeknight game. And I would assume there's going to be a great crowd there on Saturday to celebrate senior night with those girls. And so You know, that's been fun to watch. And so, you know, I think that's up to them to sit down, come up with a decision and figure out what's the best thing to do for that program and how to do right by Coach Caldwell and those girls to keep that program intact and keep her at the helm of it for a long time to come.
Josh, what are your thoughts on, you know, the success of Coach Caldwell in year one and quite possibly what could come after that in terms of growing the program and everything like that?
I mean, you know, like Fisher said, and you said yourself, you know, obviously, you know, the highlight, you know, the lights are on them now. I mean, like the attention, I mean, you know, it's grown as the seasons went on. But the thing for Coach Caldwell is this isn't her first rodeo. I mean, she won and won big at Glenville State. So, I mean, like, this is something she's used to. I think this is an expectation that, kind of like Fisher said, like the culture that she has in her mind and she's been able to build there in a really fast time is impressive. I mean, I think she is – and she's fiery. I mean, if you watch her on the sidelines, I mean, she gets after it. And
I can imagine
it's the same in practice. And that passion and – just kind of like leaks into the players, it leaks into the fans. And I mean, I think that's the reason, like, you know, like Fisher said, that you're seeing fans turn out now and you're seeing a lot of the interest there. Well, like I said, I mean, admittedly myself, I check the box scores now and I like you sold me out and said, I'm 43 years old and I've never done that before in my life. So, credit to her and the players and the staff for making me do that now. But, you know, stuff like that, I think it's just, you know, you try to block all that stuff out and not worry about that. I mean, there's a lot of season left. I mean, you know, for them, I mean, you know, you got one regular season game left. You've got the conference tournament. And, you know, you would have to believe at this point that there will be some type of postseason appearance for them. I mean, you know, whether, you know, it's, you know, whether it's the big dance.
The big dance with the WNIT, which they have a guaranteed bid to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
postseason tournament, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot to look forward to and not worry about all that stuff. I mean, you know, all you can worry about is what's ahead of you, you know, in this time. And, you know, for her and the players, you know, that I think that's, you know, winning and, you know, winning tomorrow. And then, you know, obviously, you know, going to the tournament and so on and so forth, the conference tournament, I should say, and worry about the rest of it when that time comes. I mean, like I'm a big believer in today and tomorrow and, or I should say today and worrying about tomorrow then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, also from her perspective too, I mean, you got to think she came here with a plan and a vision and you don't go into a job, especially when you're in that position. Like she's got a lot of eyes, she's got a lot of pressure on her. And so to come into that job and obviously, you know, she's executed her plan to perfection. But I'm sure that she didn't come here thinking this was going to be a 1 year stop. Right. And probably didn't think it was going to be a 2 or 3 or 4 year stop based on her signing a 7 year contract. Right. She is a, you know, native of West Virginia. She won a lot of games at Glenville and she's been in the state for a long time. Obviously, Justin's on staff with the basketball program, the men's basketball program. And so, you know, there's a lot of factors that could lead her to stay. But, you know, something that I've learned over the years and especially in this business is there's only one person that makes those decisions. And it's the person that's life is changing based on that decision. Right. We can't make it for her. Christian can't make it for her. That's up for her and Justin to sit down and decide what's best for them and their family moving forward. And I'm confident that she'll do whatever that is, just like everybody else would. But at the end of the day, just because she came here, you know, that's what kind of drives me crazy about where we are. It's like, yeah, you came here and you did exactly what you thought you were going to do. And now, okay, well, I did that and it's time to go somewhere else. Well, why? You know, Marshall's a great place. Marshall's obviously given what you need to win games. It's given you the resources that you needed to build a competitive roster, to build not only a competitive roster, but a championship level roster. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, drives me crazy about where we are is that, you know, we're sort of looked at as a stepping stone. Now, Marshall can be a home for people. And, you know, that's been proven over time. And I think it can be a home for Coach Caldwell and her family. And she can build a tremendous program and have a lot of success over a long time here. The grass isn't always greener on the other side. And we've seen that in a couple of instances on the men's side. But, you know, I think I don't want to take credit or shine away from what they're doing right now. Josh brought up a great point. They've got a lot of season left. And the only thing on her mind or their mind is winning tomorrow and then going and winning that championship and doing whatever they can do in the NCAA tournament. And hopefully that's a long run. You know, I mean, last year we saw FAU go to the Final Four. No one thought that was possible either. You know, you get hot at the right time and you do things the right way. And then you wind up looking back and saying, damn, that was fun. You know, and so it's all about, I always said, you know, even in 2021, which is my last season, you know, we were struggling pretty mightily all the way through the season. And, you know, my mindset was we got to be good for 4 days. At that point, it was Frisco. Now it's Pensacola. You got to be good for 4 days at this level. And really, you can turn a pretty terrible season into a smashing success with 4 good days in Pensacola now. And so, you know, obviously they have a championship to follow up on in Pensacola. And so I'm really excited to, you know, to see them hopefully follow through on that, win a championship. And hopefully we come home with 2 trophies in Pensacola. You never know. All it takes. You never know.
You were listening.
That's kind of the great thing about, you know, college basketball in general. That's for me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love college football.
I say this. I know where you're going with this. I say the same thing all the time.
But dude, I mean, like college basketball, like the tournament is mm-hmm. the ultimate, yep. You know, because like it truly brings out the David versus Goliath type situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, like awesome. You said, I mean, FAU going to the Final Four, you know, last year. I mean, I saw Duke play Butler in the national championship in 2010.
Won by 1 point.
Yeah, they did. I about passed out when that ball was in the
almost air. Almost lost by 2.
Yeah.
Horseshoes and hand grenades. Horseshoes and hand grenades,
right,
brother.
That's right.
But that was a good Butler team, too. I mean, you know, that was
a very good Butler team. Very good
Butler team. A couple of NBA guys on it. George Mason,
Matt Howard.
But that's, like I said, man, that's the great thing. I mean, like, for me, like, I always point to this. I mean, 1998, Bryce Drew against Valparaiso.
Against
Ole Miss. He hits the like we just come in from practice baseball and it's, you know, 20-25 guys and I mean who have no interest whatsoever in Bryce Drew and Valparaiso basketball, but dude hits that shot and I mean like 25 guys in the locker room just go absolutely nuts because it just is what it is. I mean, like, it's just that is the ultimate, like, you have one game type situation, and it's just one game for, like you know, Fisher said, it's one game for 4 days, and it's, you know, one game for five, you know, I guess 5 rounds necessarily to win a championship. I mean, so, like, you know, the opportunity is there for everyone. I mean, it's not like football. I mean, like, you know, the idea of a small team going in and winning the national championship in football is extreme to say the least.
It's come and gone.
Yeah. I mean, it never really came, but it is gone.
It never really came. It was the
longest shot possible, but in basketball, it's different. I mean, in basketball, it's there. So, I mean, like, you know, I love college football and I mean, but man, college basketball just has a different feel when it's especially in tournament time. It's a different breed of excitement, and you know, Coach Caldwell and the girls have got that going on. And you know, like Fisher said, I mean, like, you know, all it takes is one game after one game after one game after one game, and then it can happen for anybody. So I mean, you know, Dan and the boys have that opportunity just the same. So
yep,
we'll see.
We'll see, and we'll turn the page now to the men's basketball team. And before we get into that, my favorite tournament story, and obviously Fisher was there for this one, was when Marshall knocked off Wichita State in the tournament. John Elmore was hitting them from deep, and it was a fantastic game and probably one of my favorite NCAA tournament moments. And this year – has been a struggle for the Herd men's basketball team. The known facts, they're on a 6-game losing streak. They're 12-18 overall in the regular season. Obviously not the kind of year that Coach Dan D'Antoni and the guys expected to have, But I'm going to start off with you, Josh. What are the four biggest problems that the team needs to fix currently heading into the tournament?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that stands out right now is just shooting. I mean, they have shot the ball terribly over the last couple games, and really about the last month, honestly. I mean, it's, you know, I was thinking about this earlier today, and Coach K, like I said, I'm a Duke fan as well, and you know, he was talking to this a couple years ago when Zion and those guys were there. He was talking to them about coaching the United States team in the Olympics, and he said that he told that guys like LeBron and Carmelo and those guys that the biggest shot in basketball is the open set three. And I mean, these guys have missed so many open set shots. I mean, from the perimeter especially. And when you're not hitting that, it just closes the door on so many things. I mean, it compacts the defense because there's no real threat of guys hitting shots, and they don't have to close out quite as hard. And there's just, it affects so many things. And, for Marshall, something that has hurt them too is really the lack of being able to get into the lane effectively. I mean, when you had guys like John and Tavion and Andrew and a couple other guys, I mean, they could get in the lane and kind of like distribute the ball a little bit and really just not even really be a point guard, but be a playmaker in a lot of instances. And and they don't have that right now. Not that I've seen anyways, I should say. But it's been there, hit and miss. I mean, Voyles has a little bit of that about him. I just don't think it's consistent enough. And Cam is not that guy. Cam is a standstill shooter. And he needs to be out on the perimeter hitting shots. And, again, you just don't have enough of that. And I think that's hurt them the most. I mean, if I could point to one thing, that's what I would say, is just not being able to hit enough open shots has hurt them. Defensively, I think they've struggled a little bit with ball pressure and keeping guys out of the lane. You've had a lot of the athletic guards. I mean, really get in the lane and hurt them, especially. It's just something that you've noticed here recently. I mean, Cam has been getting eaten up by guys in the post. And I think a lot of guys have attacked him in that way. So, not having, obviously losing Micah last year, I mean, hurts that. I mean, that's not having a rim protector. It's different. Like, if you have, and I was just talking about this earlier today, in college basketball for me, you're not always going to hit shots. I mean, no one ever always hits shots. So, I mean, that's where, defending the ball and rebounding kind of come into play. And you really have to have one or the other. You have to have guys that can either pressure the ball on the perimeter, or you have to have a guy there underneath the rim that can protect the rim. Because if you don't have either one, then it just opens you up in so many ways to the opposing team getting in the lane, like I said, and then kicking it out for open shots, or like I said, a variety of ways. So those things, I think, are just, killing Marshall. I mean, like I said, not hitting shots and not being able to pressure the ball defensively, whether it be on the perimeter or on the interior one. I think those two things are really the two biggest issues that they're facing. Obviously depth has not been great for them this year. I mean, Fisher and I talked about it earlier. And I'm not trying to slam guys, because that's just not what I'm here to do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there are probably some guys who are seeing minutes that maybe they shouldn't be. And that's because there are guys either on the bench or being redshirted that shouldn't be. And maybe that can be said for a variety of different reasons. But, when you thrust guys into minutes being played that maybe aren't ready to play, then there's a trickle effect there. And it's just, like I said, I'm trying not to slam anyone here, but you know, it's tough to be an 18-year-old kid, 19-year-old kid playing against 22, 23-year-old kids, and in some cases 24 and 25-year-old kids because of COVID. You know, it's just worlds of different. I mean, like, you know, and I'll use Ryan because, I mean, he's a freshman and he's getting, you know, a decent amount of playing time. You know, I mean you, if you put him next to, you know, say a guy that plays for JMU, what's the one guard that they have that's been really good for them this year? Edwards. I mean, if you put him next to Edwards, I mean, like, it's a noticeable difference.
Night and day.
And I mean, it's just, you know, that's a tough guard for him. I mean, like, whether it be offensively or defensively, one, I mean, that guy's going to be bigger and stronger than he is, and it's not going to allow him to get in the lane as much, or it's going to allow that guy to get around him more, and so on and so forth. But anyways, I think those are probably the three biggest things. I mean, I'm not sure what a fourth would be, but I would say, you know, shooting, you know, lack of ball pressure and depth have been, you know, pretty evident, you know, in my opinion.
Okay. Before we get to Fisher, I would say that probably the overall lack of point guard, you know, not having a true point guard is probably what's hurt them the most. Like you said, Josh, you know, just being that guy that could distribute the ball, get teammates involved. That's what Andrew Taylor was for the Herd for the 4 years he was there. He ended up going to Mississippi State. Things didn't work out there, but one thing that you could say about Andy was that he was a true point guard, and he was a guy that could collapse the defense. He could kick the ball out to guys for an open shot, but just not having that guy that was a true point guard kind of hurt them this year, because Jacob Connor, in my opinion, is playing a little bit out of position at that spot right now, but we'll see what happens. Fisher, what do you think are some of the downfalls of what's been going on with the Herd so far as the men's side?
Shooting. And I would agree with Stowers' assessment of depth. You know, I think at the bottom of this roster, there are some guys that, you know, we probably could utilize those scholarships in a little bit of a different manner. But when you go, I think they're 15 for 83 from 3-point in the last three games. When you run a system that is predominantly your success is predicated by how well you shoot the ball. Because when you make open shots, it opens everything else up. It opens your little bunnies underneath the rim. You know, when you look at how this roster is constructed, if you look at the transfers, I mean, Stowers highlighted Kevon. I think Kevon's been a success. Nate Martin is an extremely fun player to watch play. I really enjoy watching that kid go to battle every night. Mm-hmm. You know, Cam Kirkman came over from VMI. I think that he's probably being asked to shoulder a little bit too much of the load right now. I think he is definitely better served of being a true spot-up three-point shooter. And obviously he's made a lot of them to prove that he can do that. He's what, ninth all time in NCAA history. Obviously, you know, COVID years kind of influenced those stats a little bit, but they have some talented kids on that team. Obviously, Obina has had a great year. The last couple of games have been rough for him, but you know, when you can't knock down open shots in the system, you're just not going to be having the level of success that they want to have or should have. And so, you know, looking forward to, you know, next year is not really something that I want to do right now because we've still got games to play. You know, they got a big one against Georgia State, and, you know, all it takes is one spark to get hot, and they do have capable talent on that team to go and make a run. You know, obviously, we've got some great teams in this conference. App State came in here. Obviously, we struggled with them down there. James Madison has you know, handled us twice, and you know, we've got some work to do to compete with the top level teams in the conference this year. But you know, all it takes is one game to spark that to light that little spark and get you on a run. But you know, who knows? But those, you know, if I had to pinpoint where the season has kind of not gone the way that I'm sure Coach Dan and you know, the staff and obviously the players too the way that they wanted it to go, it would have to start with their inability to consistently shoot the ball. You know, I do think we've struggled to D up at times. We've had to win games ugly, and we just haven't been able to do that. And when you're not shooting the ball well, you have to win ugly, right? And so that's not, you know, we normally we get above 75, 76 points and we're winning games. And that just hasn't always been the case this year because we're just not we're not able to stop people at an effective clip. And, you know, we're just not putting balls through the hoop at the rate that we're used to seeing. And, you know, but it's I told Stowers this earlier. We lost three all-conference players from that team last year.
Yep.
And one of them we lost in the last week of the transfer portal. And so, you know, to expect, you know, obviously we expect to have a winning product on the floor year in and year out. And that is a realistic expectation and what we should expect. You know, you should demand success and greatness from all your programs, right? But you also have to realize what we're dealing with in today's environment. We're dealing with two SEC schools that poached two of our players. Obviously, you know, with Drew, it didn't work out down there at Mississippi State. He went to a program that he's probably not really the best fit for. But, you know, for those guys, hey, we're going to tell this. And this is the bad part about the portal to me is they're going to tell you whatever they got to tell you to get you in the door. Because mm-hmm. for them, all they have to do is get you through that door and get you to sign on the dotted line that you're going to come and play for them. They'll pay whatever they got to pay to have a 20 plus point a game scorer sitting on their bench to provide depth in case of injury. All right. So they're going to call you. Yeah. You're going to come here. You're going to compete for a starting spot. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And we're going to give you this much money and whatever else we got to give you to make to get this deal done. Obviously heard a lot of rumors about what was thrown at him. And it was a heck of an offer. Right. And then he gets down there and it's totally different than what he was expecting. And so it's just hard to compete with that when you've got the SEC and ACC and all of these big schools. So I'm really hoping and praying that at some point they can figure out a way to put a cap and a lid on this thing. And I'm not one that's against the kids getting what they're worth, right? I'm not one that's against them being able to profit from their name and likeness. I want them to have all the opportunity in the world to go out and profit just the way that anybody else would if you went out and got a job, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously that's a whole different can of worms. But you know, these schools that are throwing $500,000-$600,000 at kids to go down and play for 1 year or, you know, a couple hundred thousand for the next 3 years or whatever the case may be, it's not a good thing for our sport. You've got to give, you know, Marshall is the backbone of Huntington, right? Huntington goes as Marshall goes. And so for us, I mean, you know, for all of these schools, all of the smaller schools, being able to compete at a high level is extremely important, especially in your two, you know, revenue producing sports in football and basketball. And it's tough right now for us. You're fighting an uphill battle every day. Not only are you looking till next year to recruit the next wave of talent into your program, you're recruiting your kids every single day with the way you wake up, with the way you go to sleep, with the way you prepare, with the way you practice, with the way you coach, with the way you help them recover in the training room, all of those things, facilities. You're recruiting your own kids every day. And so it's a tough ball game that we're playing right now. But, you know, my point was we're sort of sitting here pounding the drum about, you know, we need this, we need that. Well, you know, we need to realize what we lost from that team. I mean, you lost a kid that's starting for, the Salt Lake City Stars in the NBA on pretty much a nightly basis in Tavion, who averaged 20 points a game for the last 4 years that he was here. One of, if not the greatest player, I would say probably him or John, you know, who's ever come through the halls of this program. And then on top of that, you lose. I mean, we were the only team in college basketball to have two 20 point a game scores last year, and we lost both of them. And then you lose Micah, who had four offers coming out of high school. We were obviously one of them. He comes here, he plays well, and bam, out the door, you know, all conference, first team, all conference freshman. It's hard to compete when you lose that much. Right. And, I think they did do a good job of going into the portal and finding guys, you know, to try to make it work, but obviously they got in late on the guard market And, you know, Kevon was, to me, was a good addition. It was just we don't have enough around those additions, and they're not quite the caliber of player from what we lost. And so that's enough to make the difference between winning and losing a lot of games at this level.
Yeah, it certainly is. And if you have a question for Fisher, Josh, or myself, you can chime in on the live stream. We're live streaming on both X as well as Facebook. I mean, Josh, you had some thoughts there as well. I mean, you know, kind of echo what you would think Fisher was talking about a little bit about, you know, you lose three key members of your team from last year. The guys that are the replacements aren't exactly filling those shoes in some instances.
Yeah, I mean, like Fisher said earlier, I mean, some of the guys on the, you know, the bottom half of the roster, I mean, I think that's maybe where Dan's approach is a little bit rigid sometimes, and in the sense that I know he wants to develop. I mean, I think he thrives on that. I think that's probably his favorite thing of coaching is developing kids. And I think that's probably most coaches. But the idea of developing, you know, multiple kids each year has got to probably, and I'm going to use this term, you know, harshly, needs to die, because I mean, it's just a different time. I mean, like Fisher said, I mean, you can't expect to bring in, you know, if you lose Tavion and Andrew, I mean, like, that's 40 points a game whacked. I mean, right there. And Micah was what, 10 points a game, so roughly
50, 12.
You're talking 50 points a game there.
Yeah.
And you know, Tavion was probably good for 5 or 6 boards. Andrew was a good rebounding guard. He, you know, 5 or 6 boards. Micah was close to a double double. I mean, so, you know, you're talking 50 points and, you know, 50 points and 20 boards a game. Not to mention, you know, usage rate. I mean, like, you're too high by a wide margin. You're two highest usage rated players. It's near impossible to replace that. But, you know, I think you kind of have, for us, I mean, and I'm going to use a baseball term here. I think you kind of have to use maybe like the money ball approach and kind of recreate them in different ways. You're not going to replace guys like that. You're just not going to. I mean, like, but I think you have to recreate them in a fashion. You know, are we going to go out and get a 20-point scorer in the portal? Yeah, a Division I 20-point scorer in the portal? Probably not. I mean, like, you know, we're certainly not going to go out and get two of them. But if you go out and get, you know, a guy that's, you know, 9 or 10 points that can shoot 40% from three and get another guy that's a 12 or 13 point score, something like that. And if you are building each year on your roster, I mean, you might be able to recreate that in essence, in, like I said, in the Moneyball fashion. You know, I don't think, and I know people think that I can't stand Dan and people think I hate on him constantly. And I'm going to talk real open here for a second. You know, I probably my greatest, you know, I'm 40, you know, like I said, Aaron sold me out earlier. I'm 43 years old. So, you know, but my favorite Marshall memory was watching, like you said, you know, watching us take down Wichita State in the tournament. I was not there. I was in Charleston at Adelphia with like 20 other people, and we were going nuts. I mean, like, I literally punched one of my buddies and bruised his arm when John hit the 1-3 from about 35 feet away on the sidelines. I left a bruise on his arm, and because I was so fired up. And the night that we won the conference tournament, I was at my buddy's house, and his wife absolutely reamed us because we were screaming and yelling at like midnight or whatever time it was. And I won't say which buddy it was because I don't want his wife to shoot me. But, you know, those are some of my favorite Marshall memories. And I'm greatly appreciative of Dan for that. I mean, like, he was, you know, he created that for me. He created that for every Marshall fan. And for anyone to say that wasn't the case, then, I mean, they're just not giving the guy credit when credit's due. Mm-hmm. I think it's in the same, on the flip side of that, I think it's when things aren't going the way that you know, we as fans expect it to. I mean, yes, there are a multitude of reasons why, and Fisher can attest to that. Winning is not easy. Anyone who thinks winning is easy is
foolish.
Himself. Yes. I mean, and that applies to basketball, football,
anything.
Winning is not easy on any level. Winning is not easy. But I think, and this is something me and Fisher talked about last week when we were talking about doing this, is to have a real open, general conversation about things that are issues in the program and being able to talk openly about those things. And, that's something that I love sports. I enjoy doing this so much with Aaron. I wouldn't do it if I didn't. But, I just like sports in general, and I'm not a combative person, maybe not the way to say it, but I enjoy, razzing people up and getting under people's skin and things like that. That's just my nature. I mean,
embrace debate, as they anybody, say on the Big Four Letter Network.
Yeah. Anybody that knows me will agree with that. If I'm not hating on you, then I probably don't like you. And I tell that people all the time. If I'm not giving you a hard time, then I probably don't like you. Right. So, for anyone who says I hate Dan, I'm giving a hard time because I want that program to win. I completely lost the point there on what I was trying to get at. But the point is, I think there are things that he does that are really good. I mean, great, in fact. And then there are things that he does that I think are, less than. And I think sometimes those things outweigh what he does really great. And I think a lot of times it's maybe happened too often, especially in recent years. That's my opinion. And, I know everyone doesn't feel that way, and that's okay. That's just how I feel.
Well, look, I think, to highlight something that you said, winning isn't easy, right? And that is not limited to Marshall. That's everywhere, right? It's not easy to win at North Carolina. It's not easy to win at Duke. It's not easy to win at Florida. It's not easy to win anywhere. It's definitely not easy in today's day and age where your guys can up and leave at the drop of a hat. It's not easy to win. Huntington, I chose to get out of athletics because I wanted to stay and raise my family here. And I wanted to be a part of this community. I wanted to be a part of all the great things that Huntington has to offer for a long time to come. And one of those things is Marshall University and its athletic programs. It's obviously near and dear to my heart. It's near and dear to my family's heart. And it's something that we wanted to be a part of. That doesn't mean that I can't acknowledge or see Huntington and Marshall's flaws, right? Huntington is not the easiest place to recruit to. When you go around to these other cities, that's the thing that I always bothered me. And I was the same way before I started working with the football program in 2015. I'd never been anywhere else, right? I'd never been to Rice. I'd never been to Middle Tennessee, Western Kentucky, Charlotte, FAU, FIU. Like, you go to these places and you see what they have to offer, and it's like, for me, before I started in athletics, Rice was a joke to me, right? Like, Charlotte was a joke. Like, how are we not beating Charlotte? And you go there and you see the campus, and it's like, yeah, that football stadium is like a high school stadium, but that campus is legit. And you're in the middle of downtown Charlotte. And, you've got that nightlife, that culture, that city, to recruit to. And you come to Huntington and you are truly recruiting to Marshall when you come to Huntington. Huntington has a lot of great things. It's not necessarily the greatest place for you have to find the type of people that want to buy in, that want to come and be a part of the fabric and the culture of Marshall and Huntington. And Coach Stan has done a great job of doing that throughout the years. We have great kids in that program. We have we graduate our kids, we bring them in, we love them up. One of the coolest things about Coach Dan and the way that he runs this program, and it's really more of a testament to him and all of the coaching staff, but, the players, everybody that makes that program go, is so we bring recruits in and we basically take them and their parents. We let them watch practice. We let anybody and everybody come up, talk to them, hang out, have a good time. After practice is over, we take them and we put them in a room with as many players want to go in that room. We don't restrict it, limit it. We don't pick and choose. Whoever wants to go and talk to the recruits that day can go in and talk to the recruits. And we shut the door and we walk out as a staff. There's no coaches in there. There's no fear of repercussions. You say whatever you need to say, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. 9 times out of 10, they walk out of that room and they say, yeah, this is where we want our kid to go. You go and watch people. You go and watch coaches and staffs. And, I mean, I've heard it from some of our current players who have, are going through a recruiting process, you know, elsewhere. Not everybody does it like him. And he is a unique individual. And he does, you know, there are some things that need to change about what's going on. And it's mostly philosophical, right? It's mostly being willing to dip into the portal to reshape that bottom of the roster to, you can be loyal to guys without being loyal to a fault. And there's a fine line that you have to walk there because, you know, obviously that's not an easy thing. Loyal people are loyal and sometimes loyal to a fault, right? But you have to make sure that it's your responsibility as the leader of the program to ultimately decide, you know, when to say when and when to move on and when to say, hey, I need to bring in someone who can really help me at the bottom of this roster, right? And I need to have 13 guys that can at least get on the floor and compete. And that's something that I think he's willing to do and willing to undertake. This thing is new for everybody. It's definitely new for someone who played here in the 60s, right? Like college basketball is in a vastly different place than it was in 2014 when he got here, and definitely a vastly different place than it was in the 60s when he was playing here. What he does know how to do is relate to kids. He gets through to kids, and he genuinely wants the best for Marshall and for the kids that are playing for him in his program. And that's something that I've always respected and loved about Coach Stan. He's honest, he's direct, and he knows how to build a culture and a program where people genuinely like being around each other. I always looked at it as the 30 guys in our travel party were my family for, you know, really 12 months out of the year. There is no off season in college athletics now. These kids are here year round, and you're building lifelong relationships. I talk to those guys all the time. They're all tremendous people, and I'm, you know, rooting and hurting through every success and every loss. And it's been tough to obviously watch them go through some struggles this year, but I'm confident that they have what it takes and they have the people in the building to evaluate themselves at the end of the year and figure out where they need to go and then go and execute the plan to make that happen. And so we'll see, you know, what the decisions are. Like I said earlier, they've got, at least 2 more games to go. And then hopefully they've got about 5 more games to go. And we see them dancing in whatever regional they go and play in. Who knows if they'll get there? Who knows if they won't? Hopefully they give us some fun memories along the way, regardless. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch the piece that Marshall put out about Steve Cotton last week.
I did.
It was pretty incredible. The last 30 seconds of that piece were awesome. And I don't know if either one of you are privileged enough to know Steve. I'm lucky to call him a friend. And at the end of that piece, he said, you know, that he wasn't sure when he got here what was going to make Huntington home, or, you know, that Huntington was going to be his home for the rest of his life. But Huntington and Marshall is a special place. And so he decided over time that this was his home and was going to be his home. And he said something that really resonated with me, and it's something that Coach Stan preaches and harps on often, is that it's less about where you finish, right? It's about how much fun you had along the way. And it's less about the wins and losses or championships or banners or whatever. It's the memories that will last a lifetime about the people that you met and the friends you made along the way. And ultimately the family that you made along the way. And that's what Coach Stan has instilled in that program. And I think you can see it from where the fan base was when he came in, when Tommy was here. It was awful. And there were, 1,000 people, 1,500 people on a good night in that arena. We're getting for, a team that's struggling, we're getting 3,500 plus, 4,500 most nights in that arena watching and cheering for us to win basketball games. And that's something that speaks to the culture, not only in the program, but also in the fan base that he's helped to establish. And when you look at the arena, how much different does that place look with the Jumbotron hanging? You know, I mean, yeah, it's made a huge,
it's totally different
environment in there. And that's, those are things like we had to fight and scratch and claw, and Coach Dan had to do all of that for trash cans that weren't from Walmart down by the floor in the arena. Like, it was like the little most crazy things that you would think, like, is he really fight? Like, it took him 5 years just to get trash cans that didn't look like garbage down by the arena. And it took him 5 years to get a leak stopped in the facility that the players had to walk past every day when we're walking into the gym. It took him 5 years to get the heat turned on over winter break, so our kids weren't catching colds trying to practice. But he fought and scratched and clawed for all of that to be able to put a winning program on the floor and to be able to have a winning culture. And, you know, regardless of this season, he has established and built that program, and that culture is in a great place. I hope he gets to see it through. If not, he's leaving it in a much better place than he found it. And I think that's all you can ask for in life. This season, irregardless of the results of this season and the record at the end of the year, this program is in a very good place moving forward, and I'm excited to watch them as an alumni of that program. I'm very excited to watch them, you know, whoever it is, whether it's Coach Dan or, you know, whoever they bring in next, to continue to build on that culture and keep some of the foundational aspects of what he put in place while he's been here, because that's what his legacy needs to be. It needs to be establishing the Green Gang, who has put together Run with the Herd, which has gone out and gotten touch points on 2,000 hopefully future students of the university, right? It the graduation success rate of his players, you know, Tavion John obviously going on to the G League and having great success. James Kelly, same thing. Darius going overseas, winning a championship over there. Adin playing at a very high level in Spain, I think, currently. He may have moved countries, but he's playing at a very high level in the European leagues over there. So, you know, we've had great success. We went 24-7 last year. We've had a little up and down season this year, but, you know, it's not lost on me, and I hope it's not lost on anybody else what we lost last year and how difficult it is to overcome that. That being said, my expectations, Coach Dan's expectations, and those players' expectations are obviously better than 12-18 and shooting, you know, 20-some percent from three on the year. That's something that, you know, I hope and expect will get fixed over the next, you know, 6-8 months before we start getting into preseason workouts. But, you know, only time can tell that. And obviously there's a lot of decisions and conversations to be made at the end of the year. But this program and the foundation of the culture that he has built and the look and feel of the program and where we sit in the stature of the Sun Belt now was Conference USA. Is pretty remarkable when you sit down and you look at it, and especially when you have the inside view that I had to watching all of that and the battles that he had to fight and the hills that he had to climb.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Aaron. I was just going to say, you were talking about Steve, you know, and I've got to know him a little bit just being at football practice and things like that. But last week, yeah, during that, when it's talking about, and you know, the guy says that, you know, he's been the soundtrack of his life in terms of Marshall for like the last X amount of years. Like, dude, that gut punched me hard because, I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, you know, basically what Steve's getting in that is that, you know, just talking about the people in his life that he's met at Marshall and just, you know, all things considered, you know, being here. And I mean, that's one of the things that, like, I've loved most about, you know, being part of Herd Nation is, I mean, like, the people that I've been able to meet and still associate with. I mean, like, you know, I have, well, football coaches from, you know, 5 and 6 years ago, still texting me and talking about things. And you know, we talk about games and, you know, what's going on and things like that. And, again, you know, outside of the conference tournament in 2014, when we won the national, or not the national championship, the conference championship, the CUSA championship, you know, I was down on the sidelines as the clock hit zero. And I mean, and having a couple of the coaches, I mean, like, and I'm a nobody, don't get me wrong. I mean, I mean nothing to these guys in the world of like what's going on here. But I mean, like, some of those guys called me out by my first name and hugged me and congratulated me. And I'm like, Coach, you have no reason to congratulate me. Like, I did nothing in here. Like, this is all on you guys. But again, that's one of the coolest things. It's just the relationship that, that I've been able to breed and build here, you know, with you guys, you know, just the same. I mean, you know, that's the people that you meet along the way that matter the most. And I think that was the kind of the gist of what, you know, Steve was, you know, the whole video was about in a way, just in honoring Steve. But like I said, when that guy talks about him being the soundtrack of Marshall, that just gut punched me. And like you said, makes you really proud to know who Steve is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Steve's a legend, and it truly is the people that make this place special. And that's what I always told recruits is, you know, you might find a shinier, flashier Tory somewhere else, but the people are going to make the difference in your experience here. And that's what I've always tried to relay, you know, anytime I've had conversations. You know, it bothers me that the football stadium looks the way that it does right now during a game. It bothers me. Like, through wins and losses, we need to be there, we need to show up, and we need to support those kids that are wearing Marshall across their chest, because it means something to all of us, right? Like, everybody else, all these other bigger schools, they have fans that, you know, I've always seen what West Virginia fans buy their shirts at Walmart, Marshall fans buy their shirts at the bursar's office paying their tuition. You know, we have a special, special culture and a special, special place, you know, obviously dating back to the plane crash and all that, you know, the resurgence and, you know, rising from the ashes of our program and our university has done over the years. What that means to the community and the fan base is obviously special in itself, but it's just the people here. It's walking down the street. It's everybody's green. You know, we are the only act in town, and that's what I've always told them. So, you know, as a town, as a fan base, as a city, we need to support those kids as if they are the only act in town, because they are. We don't have professional anything. Right. We've got the Bengals a couple hours away. And trust me, I go to plenty of those games. I won't talk about any of those other awful franchises anywhere else around this area. But, you know, for us here in Huntington, Marshall is the pros, and these kids are the pros, and we need to support and treat them as such, and show up and support them through the good and the bad. Like, I don't care if we're 4-8 next year. I'm going to be in that. My butt is going to be in section 111, row 51, seat 32 for every single home game next year. That's a fact. I'm going to be to a couple of away games. I'm going to be at every basketball game. You know, my dad and I have season tickets to the baseball games. I'm going to be out supporting them and can't wait to do so tomorrow and throughout the rest of their season. The people have to make the difference in Huntington. If you want to expect winning, you have to give 110% of yourself and your time to be able to expect winning out of the coaching staff and out of these players. You got to show up and support them, because you never know whether Patrick Mahomes is or Joe Burrow is going to be on your sideline watching you play. You know, like, we had that game against James Madison on ESPN, right? We had nobody in the seats for a Wednesday night primetime ESPN game. Season wasn't going that great. It was a little cold, but you know what? Those kids are cold too. They're out there competing with those letters across their chest, and they're playing for that name on the front, not the name on the back. And we have to get back to doing a better job of supporting those kids, and then we can expect the wins to come. So that's always been my two cents on it. And, you know, obviously I'm a part of the fan base now. You know, I used to get paid to be at the games. Now I pay to be at the games and love being at the games. It's a special part of this community. It's a special part of my life, and hopefully a lot of your all's lives too. So, you know, that's something I just kind of wanted to harp on a little bit about, getting out, supporting these kids, supporting this school, and supporting the winning efforts of these coaches, staffs, and players.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you, Fisher. And quick Steve story. I remember seeing him at the Cleveland Classic, the matchup between Marshall and Duquesne. And I met him, shook his hand, and I remember he was talking to me a little bit about asking me where I was from. And I told him I was from Northeast Ohio. He said, I remember listening to Joe Tate call the Cavs games, you know, back in the day. And I'm like, yeah, I remember him too. He was in one of my communications classes giving a speech. So, yeah, I mean, Steve's a great guy. I mean, he's always been a consummate professional. He's been nothing but nice to me. And, you know, hey, 30 years goes by like that. And, you know, hopefully we'll have him, you know, as the soundtrack of Marshall Athletics for a long time to come. But I mean, it's like you said, Fisher, it's all about, you know, getting out, supporting the athletes, you know, because, you know, this is one of those things that Marshall is, it is a family. I mean, you know, like I've gotten to know great people like Josh and yourself and Zach Arrowwood, Chris McLaughlin, all those guys. I mean, you know, I remember seeing Zach at the Bowling Green game and, you know, it was all good. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a family. It's definitely an awesome thing. And my son, who's six now, he tells me, he's like, I'm the only one in school with a Marshall sweatshirt, Dad. And I'm, that makes me
cool. Keep repping. Keep repping. That's right. That's right.
I'm like, yeah, it definitely makes you cool, buddy. So, yeah, it's definitely a family thing. We'll close it on this note. Obviously, the home opener, Jack Cook Field, named after the legendary baseball coach. First game, first inaugural season of the field. Fisher, you're going to be there. Josh, you're going to be there over the weekend. I mean, it was a long time coming. A lot of people, alumni, townspeople, everybody affiliated with the university had been dreaming, wishing for a baseball stadium for the longest time. Now it's finally here. Just talk to me a little bit about your excitement about this finally coming to fruition. We'll start with you, Josh.
You know, baseball is in my blood. You know, that was what my dad played. That's what all, you know, myself and my two brothers played, you know, predominantly, I should say. You know, baseball's in my blood. I love it. I here locally, I go to Hurricane games, you know, as many as I can. And you know, when the Herd's playing in Charleston on the weekends, I try to go. It's hard sometimes to make, you know, obviously weekday games because, you know, it's down that way and I work up this way and it's just, you know, midday games are just a tough play for me, but I try to go to as many games as I can. But the stadium, like you said, it's been a long time coming. I mean, like, you know, you have countless guys that have played at Marshall who have been saying for years now, well, they promised me a stadium back in 1987. And, you know, here we are in 2024 and we're getting ready to play the first game tomorrow at 3 o'clock. So, you know, that's a tribute to Coach Cook, to all the guys that have played there. Anyone that has put any amount of work to it, it's a tribute to them. You know, our current regime, the previous regime, I mean, obviously they all had a lot to do with it. You know, former coaches, you know, current coaches. I mean, just from top to bottom. I mean, it's a tribute to them. And I really wish I could be there tomorrow, just for, you know, for game one to hear the national anthem, because I mean, like, that's really a historical thing for Marshall University. I mean, like, you know, it's really a landmark day for them. And I think I hope that it sets the tone moving forward with the program. I hope that fans, you know, like Fisher was saying, you know, get out and baseball is you know, it kind of gets put behind sometimes here locally. I mean, albeit like it seems like we have just as much. I mean, people don't realize that, I don't think, a lot of times, but we have a lot of talent here locally. You know, the Collins kid is signed to play at Marshall next year from Cabell Midland. I mean, he's, you know, so I mean, there's local talent here that can play there. But, you know, I hope the fans come out. I mean, obviously, looking at, like, the availability map, I mean, you know, the season tickets look like they went pretty well. You know, single-game tickets, I think they said for this weekend it was already, like, standing room only. So, hopefully, you know, that may be a hard thing to maintain. I mean, obviously, it's opening day, and that's a huge deal. But, you know, I hope the fans support it all season long and going forward. Like I said, I'm Mike Fisher. Yeah, I've got season tickets. It's exciting. You know, there's just something about, you know, it being at a basketball game and being at a football game are their own animals. But man, being at a baseball game, you know, on a warm summer afternoon, just watching, hearing the crack of the bat and watching. I mean, I don't know. I love the movie The Rookie, and to hear Dennis Quaid in that movie talk about just the camaraderie of baseball and the history of baseball and, you know, to be America's pastime and things like that. There's just so much to love about the sport, and I think it gets lost upon people because it is a slower sport. And I mean, like, you know, it is. I'll argue with anybody. I mean, right now, hitting a baseball is the toughest to do in in sports, period. I mean, that's
three out of ten makes you a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, daggone right. Daggone right, dude. And you know, with guys nowadays, I mean, throwing, you know, high 90s, you know, yeah, a lot of guys throwing in, you know, triple digits. I mean, like, you know, that number is actually falling off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now if you're a 275 hitter and hitting 30 home runs, I mean, you've got a chance of being a Hall of Fame. So, I mean, like, it's just, you know, it is exceptionally hard sport, but it is an easy sport to love. And I do. I love it. I'm excited for this weekend. I'm kind of getting chills and just kind of like getting edgy talking about it, to be honest. But it's exciting. Real excited for Coach Bills and the players and, you know, for this season and moving forward. I can't wait.
Absolutely. And that'll wrap it up here for this evening. A great conversation, guys. We certainly appreciate your time. Fisher Cross, Josh Stowers, thanks again. We certainly appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Appreciate you, man.